Hi, I'm Dan, and I'm working from home in the South Loop, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you today here on show number 912. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. So good morning to Bob. And hey, big news this week that an official swim in the Chicago River is in the works for the first time in about 100 years. It's being called the Chicago River Swim, and it will benefit ALS research, which is a great cause. It's happening on September 22nd and is kicking off at the Dearborn and Clark Bridges. Swimmers can make a loop between State Street and Wolf Point. Got about 500 swimmers who will be able to participate, and there's an application process right now online. Participants will be selected in May. It sounds like fun. I've done kayaking on the Chicago River right around the area where the swim will be taking place, and I have to say the views are beautiful. But when I kayaked, I didn't have to come into a lot of physical contact with the water. That's the elephant in the room, right? The quality of the water. Environmental organizations have been working hard to restore the water quality of the river back to levels where it's safe to swim in. And hey, I applaud those efforts. The river is an important part of our ecosystem, and we should all advocate for its well-being. The folks at Chicago River Swim say that they are monitoring the quality of the water to make sure it's okay for swimmers. A little bit of history that you're probably aware of. The flow of the river was reversed in 1900 because we were dumping our sewage in the river, which of course was flowing into Lake Michigan, our drinking water. Like I said earlier, environmental organizations and the city have worked for years to make the river not gross and, more importantly, safe for humans and the environment. So Chicago River Swim is using data from another organization called H2Now. This group has sensors in the water and monitors river conditions in real time. So earlier this week, I checked their website, and according to what I saw there, their water quality data sensors are offline for the season. But hey, maybe the sensors will be back up by September, hopefully. I do like the idea of being able to swim in the river. Maybe one day, more than just the area of downtown will be available to swim in. Not holding my breath for Bubbly Creek, though. I mean, if I were at Bubbly Creek in the early 1900s, I'd definitely be holding my breath. It's the southern tip of the South Branch of the Chicago River, and it was pretty disgusting. Upton Sinclair wrote about it in his book, The Jungle. Here's a bit of what he had to say about it. Quote, Bubbly Creek is an arm of the Chicago River and forms the southern boundary of the Union Stockyards. All the drainage of the square mile of packing houses empties into it so that it is really a great open sewer 100 or 2 feet wide. The grease and chemicals that are poured into it undergo all sorts of strange transformations, which are the cause of its name. It is constantly in motion, as if huge fish were feeding in it, or great leviathans disporting themselves in its depths. Bubbles of carbonic gas will rise to the surface and burst and make rings 2 or 3 feet wide. Here and there, the grease and filth have caked solid, and the creek looks like a bed of lava. Chickens walk about on it, feeding, and many times an unwary stranger has started to stroll across and vanished temporarily. The packers used to leave the creek that way, till every now and then the surface would catch fire and burn furiously, and the fire department would have to come and put it out. The banks of Bubbly Creek are plastered with thick hairs, and this also the packers gather and clean. End quote. So, as we gear up for the Chicago River Swim, I should mention the EPA in 2011 said the river is safe to swim in. So times have changed. And if you're going to do the swim, more power to you. For me, I might just stick with kayaking, though. Well, I invite you into the waters of the show this week as we hear some new local music, learn about the nation's only freestanding and free of charge toddler play space on the city's south side, and discuss the possibility of paying Chicago school board members. So jump on in. The water is delightful. Chicago's first school board elections happen this year. Currently, those who serve on the Chicago School Board do not get paid. But should they get paid? There are those who are making the push for Chicago School Board members to be compensated financially for their service, while others feel that the costs are too much. Becky Vivi is the bureau chief at Chalk Beach Chicago. That's a nonprofit news organization covering education. And earlier this week, she wrote about this issue. We could check out chalkbeat.org. Becky, welcome back to the show. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So, all right, this issue of paying the Chicago School Board members. So can you explain what's the rationale for this push to pay them?
Sure. So I think the rationale really boils down to just how much time these board members would have to put in, but also really the massive responsibility they would have overseeing essentially the second largest employer in the state and a city school district that has a $9.8 billion budget. That's almost as big as the city council's budget. As you know, the 50 aldermen do collect a salary and they are full-time aldermen.
Right.
Now, this is obviously, you know, aldermen can have side jobs and there are questions around that. But I think the case is that this is a unique school board position in that it is overseeing such a massive system with big implications and that these aren't really volunteer positions. So the advocates pushing for this is that there should be some way for people to serve on the board and be compensated for it. Another reason that they're saying this is important is that it will open up who can serve. If you don't pay these positions, probably only wealthier people who can afford to take a position like this on will do it. You're not going to get the low-income mother who has two children in the school system and lives on the west side able to kind of take a position like this that's unpaid and yet asks for 30 hours of her time.
Right. So this is also part of this is to maybe open up some diversity in opinion and viewpoints of those who are part of the school board.
Correct. The other thing I should mention, too, is that the elected school board legislation does not allow current staff of the school district, so teachers, to serve on the school board. So if a teacher wanted to run, they would have to quit their job if they won and got a seat. They wouldn't be able to serve on the school board and continue teaching or continue working at the district if they're in another position.
Right. So, okay, we've heard some of the rationale there. I mean, $9.8 billion, that's the budget to try to also open up some diversity of opinion here. In terms of, and I think this is important because, you know, no matter where you live in the state, I think we hear school board and, okay, yeah, you're making decisions about policies when it comes to the schools. But just in terms of what this job demands, you said it's about 30 hours a month, I believe, in terms of the time commitment. But there's the budget, but they're making, especially when we think about the city of Chicago, like the gravity of these decisions. And there are, I think, over 20 people on this board. I mean, we can't understate that enough. Like they're making some pretty big decisions about one of the biggest school districts in the nation.
Right. And they're being expected to represent districts that at least for this first wave, these districts are essentially the size of a state Senate district. So if you're a state senator, you represent I'm going to get the number wrong, but like it's more than 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. So if you're a school board member, it's not just attending the meetings and the board says they estimate the 25 to 30 hours of work per month. It's the estimate that the board currently gives for like what its appointed members spend on this. Mm-hmm. But you're going to be essentially representing hundreds of, 100,000 people in a district at this school board level. You know, if you want to do community engagement in your district, the way that an alderman might have ward night, that's time and effort that you have to spend. I should note that the bill that is being proposed doesn't actually set an amount, and it doesn't actually even say that the school board would have to be paid. It just lifts the restriction on paying school board members so that the board could make a decision to buy a resolution, pass a resolution saying, board members are going to be paid X dollars.
Right. And I mentioned that there is some pushback against this, and the main reason, of course, we could probably guess is the finances here, because that's something that keeps coming back up to the forefront whenever we talk about really anything in Chicago. But there's some folks that say, look, not right now. We can't afford to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the issue of compensating Chicago school board members did come up in 2021 when this bill was debated, and they took it off the table. And, rural and downstate, as well as suburban lawmakers were like, well, our school board members volunteer. They're getting paid except for covering some slight expenses related to the job. And then, we know across Chalkbeat, we have bureaus in many cities across the country, including out in Denver, Colorado. And in Colorado, they had this debate too. And it was really, is this a job or is it a civic duty? Is this a something that you're doing to give back to your community, or is it an actual job that requires expertise and therefore some kind of compensation? A couple of years ago, their lawmakers did vote to do something similar to what this bill in Illinois would do, which is to essentially lift the language restricting it and allowing Denver's elected school board to compensate board members. Now there's a little bit of, because you can't, you don't want board members voting to pay themselves more.
Right.
They essentially, it only applies to newly elected members, and they they're capping it at $33,000 annually out in Denver. So a $33,000, that's not like a $100,000 six-figure job. But it's the reasonable compensation, people say, for the amount of time and work it would take to oversee an urban school district out there. Now, Chicago Public Schools is also facing a deficit, and I think people who are against this idea make the argument, a very valid argument, that every dime a school district collects should be put toward educating kids, put toward the work of education, and not toward, not be diverted into either central office bureaucracy or school board staff, for instance. So that's one of the other, points that people will make, is that, dollars are precious in school systems. And so where do we want to spend those dollars to get the best outcomes for kids? Probably in the classroom.
It's interesting, that debate about, is this a job or is this a civic duty? I mean, I think that's a really fascinating kind of angle with this, because one of the things about the school board is usually they're not experts in education. These are just members of the community that are supposed to represent the community, but the expertise is a few rungs down. I guess you could think of that in the classroom, at the administrative level, the teaching level. So these are not experts. And so the line of reasoning here is, well, should we pay them money for this job that they're not experts at? They are doing work. It's not that they're not doing work, but they're bringing some community voice and input. Should we compensate that? And I think, that's going to be part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say that the other side of that would be also, if you compensate them, will you attract people with expertise, more expertise on education? And I think that is, I don't know, it's the $1 million question, if you will, to whether or not compensation actually translates to, people who have better expertise or more expertise or better community voice. These things are going to be, and there's no silver bullet, whether or not they say, okay, fine, pay your board members or not. There's no guarantee. At the end of the day, people in communities are going to elect who they feel are going to represent them the best. And so it's going to be very interesting to see both how this bill moves, if it moves. You know, it's kind of been sitting in the legislature since last fall. It, you know, there's only another month or so of legislative time down in Springfield. I don't know that it will get the traction that it needs to get over the finish before these November elections and before these new members are seated in January. And even if it did, those, again, the language allows for essentially the board to pass a resolution to pay its members. It's not the state lawmaker saying board members in Chicago must be paid X. That's not what the bill says. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it moves, and we'll see if maybe after this first set of members gets on board in this first term, maybe down the road it becomes another conversation once you actually have people serving and a better realistic picture of how much time it takes. And, you know, if we're attracting diverse candidates from communities, or if it's all candidates who maybe have other jobs, are wealthier, or are supported by special interests that have money.
Well, we will see what happens here, but this is something to think about, the possibility of Chicago school board members getting compensated for their service. You can read the full story by Becky Vivi at chalkbeat.org. Becky Vivi is the bureau chief at Chalkbeat Chicago. Hey, Becky, I always appreciate the time and talking education with you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike. It's wonderful to be here.
Raising young children is hard work for anyone. And if families are living in areas of Chicago that have been historically underserved, challenges can be exacerbated by the surrounding environment. Hello Baby is the nation's first and only freestanding, free of charge, drop-in play space for babies, toddlers, and their caregivers. They're located in the West Woodlawn neighborhood in Chicago, and the founder and executive director of Hello Baby is with us today. Her name is Debbie Frisch, and Debbie, it is great to have you here on Outside the Loop. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. So we should also mention here that you have co-authored a book called Hello Baby, Building an Oasis in a Play Desert. So let's start there, Debbie. When we use that term play desert, what are we talking about here?
Well, I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with the term food deserts, which is lack of access to healthy, affordable food. And play deserts mean there aren't developmentally appropriate places for children to play. And we know that play is the work of childhood. The famous Mr. Rogers and so many other leaders have said that. Mm-hmm. It's how children learn on every level. So if they're not playing, they're falling developmentally behind. They learn everything they need to know through play.
And so what we're seeing then in certain areas of Chicago is that there just aren't spaces that, like you say, have developmental appropriate places to play. So we think of certain daycares and facilities where kids can go and just kind of run around and play with toys and explore. That just doesn't exist in some areas.
Well, we have daycares, but those are fee-based. And those are for the moms who are working or the dads. You know, you can get vouchers from the state for those. But I raised my kids on the north side of the city, and they're also fee-based, but there were a lot of drop-in play spaces for children to go to, and the parks were well-maintained, and we even just had coffee shops and a lot of places to go. And it's much different in other neighborhoods in our city. And we've seen that parents are in a lot of neighborhoods, they're afraid to let their kids go to the parks because of violence and the danger there. I can't imagine having a summer not being outside, but yeah, these kids aren't. Sometimes it's as simple as you're in a three flat and you're on the third floor and the second floor doesn't want to hear the thump, thump, thump of little feet running back and forth all right. The time. But that's what kids do. And there really aren't a lot of places to go. It's not realistic to expect these families to travel to the north side. You'd be in the car more than you, or on the bus more than you'd be in the play space. And it's expensive. So we really wanted to bring a community center to neighborhoods. My goal is to reach the neighborhoods in Chicago that are play deserts and maybe beyond. I really think birth to three is the biggest time of brain growth. 80% of a child's brain is developed by the time they're 3 years old. But it's also the biggest social service gap because we're focused on kindergarten and we're becoming more focused on pre-K, but there's nothing for this really pivotal time to serve children.
Tell us how Hello Baby works here, because you're the nation's first and only freestanding, free of charge, drop-in play space. How does this service work?
Well, we're at the corner of St. Lawrence and 61st Street. We rented a storefront. Perkins and Will did the design for us, which is an international architecture firm founded in Chicago. But really, you just show up. We ask you to register the first time you come in and you sign your release. This is not a daycare, so you're not dropping your kids off. It's caregiver and child. We're targeted for children birth to 3 years old, but we know that in Woodlawn, only about half the kids are in pre-K. So if you're not in school, come on in. I'm not checking IDs at the door. And in the summer, a lot of our graduates like to come back. So we welcome that too. So we've really become a family and a bright spot on that corner. And I think the neighborhood is better because we're there.
You know, I think what you're doing here and what you're talking about speaks to a bigger issue. And it's something that I like to repeat here on this program because I think we're all in this together. And the thing I repeat is that we're all human. And you might hear that and say, well, yeah, no kidding. Of course we're all human. But sometimes I think we need a reminder about that. And really what you're doing here, I think this shows how different areas, right, different neighborhoods of the same city, the same place, have had different historical experiences, have been in some cases treated differently. However, we have something in common. It's that humanity, and we all have the same basic needs. I think what you're doing here speaks to that. Does that strike you when you think about what you do?
Absolutely. We all want the same things for our family, whether we're low income or we're rolling in money. And I do think the increasing wealth disparity is making it even more difficult to raise a child. So many of our families they don't make a living wage. So they've got to supplement it in all these ways. And so sometimes the play thing falls beneath the cracks because you're trying to pay the rent and put food on the table. I have two grown daughters, and I was a foster mom for about 15 years, and I had kids birth to 5 years old. And I, through that work, I really saw the gaps, the huge, enormous, gaping gaps in some neighborhoods in our city. And I get a lot of kids, many kids, who would come into my care, and the term I use is container syndrome. And based on what the social worker would tell me, and just my own observations, I could tell they were probably strapped in a car seat in front of a screen for most of their time. So I'd get them, say, 6 to 9 months old. I'd have my playmat all set up. I'd get them out, when they came, and we'd eventually get down there together, and they just absolutely hated it. They didn't know what to do. And I'd get, a 7-month-old child. I could tell because their muscle tone was terrible. Their head was flat and bald in the back, which meant they'd been resting against something.
Right.
They were used to seeing, these visuals on the screen, but they really had no activity that defined their day. And I think they tended to, every time they fussed, they were given something to eat just to quiet them down. And again, this is not the fault of the parents who are doing the best they can. I think it's the fault of society for not providing these systems to support families. So usually within 2 days, I could get them liking the playmat. We just do it for longer and longer. I get down with them. I'd regulate them. So then they're playing now. They're sleeping through the night. You know, they're not up every couple hours. They're eating full meals. And say 5 weeks later, when it was time for them to go on to either back to their family or to their permanent home, they'd be developmentally caught up. But not everybody gets a Debbie at that time in their lives. And right. That's kind of what caused me to think, what can I do to address this? And I honestly thought this is the most obvious idea in the world. Why isn't anyone else doing this? And there's research all over the place that shows the benefits of play. The American Medical Association, the UN have both written declarations on how important play is to childhood. But we built the first brick and mortar space that was all about play and just for play.
Yeah, and free so people can drop in.
And free. And there was a lot of discussion about that when we were launching. People said, well, the caregivers have to have skin in the game. First of all, you can't take skin from someone who doesn't have a whole lot to give. And the second thing is the skin in the game is that they're there interacting with their child.
I think that's incredibly important to provide these opportunities that maybe some of us have taken for granted or don't even know exist. You know, I think for all the talk about in these election cycles of, you know, we gotta do it for the kids, except we don't do it for the kids a lot of times.
We don't do it for the kids. And I think government is so dysfunctional right now. It takes so long to get something like this going, even though all the research supports it. So part of the reason we wrote the book was we wanted to share the model with others who might want to do something similar, because we know we've been open close to 7 years, 6.5 years. So we know we had a pandemic right in the middle of it, but we know our model works. So we're sharing that with others who might want to do something similar. And we also think, my initial goal was address the play deserts in Chicago, but this isn't just a Chicago problem. It's nationwide, probably worldwide, but let's stick to the United States for right now. But it's a huge issue. And kids who are not afforded social opportunities, you know, they can't problem solve, they can't communicate well with their peers, they can't manage a setback well. So through play and through interaction, you can refine all of those skills.
You mentioned the book, and we want to mention it again. It's called Hello Baby, Building an Oasis in a Play Desert. And you said this is kind of a blueprint for other folks to do the work that you have been doing here for the past mm-hmm. few years. And so I know that you've got this kind of book tour that you're going yes. on here in April. This is a very exciting. You're going where? To the University of Chicago, Columbia College. This is coming up soon.
We're at a couple spots in Chicago, and then I'm with two other authors. So we'll also be in New York City, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C. at the end of April. And the thread with all of our books, one is Reclaiming Our Democracy by Sam Daly Harris, and one is Changing the World Without Losing Your Mind by Alex Counts. And it's all how to impact change. And we each come at it from a different starting point, but we're all trying to do the same thing. And you don't have to, I think part of what's happening now is the problems seem so insurmountable in this world today. And it's easier just to roll over and go back to sleep and not think about it because it's so overwhelming. But my call is pick the thing you know how to do that you love to do. And even if you just do it a little bit, just do something.
Before I let you go, Debbie, the impact that you've had on the West Woodlawn community in Chicago, can you quantify that? You said that the graduates come back, these kids, but have you seen the relationships that you've built, that you've started really in this community in West Woodlawn? Have you seen those grow?
Yes. And there's a couple things. The building that I'm renting space in, and we are working on new locations now, but where I am now, that building was half full when we came in, and now it's fully occupied. We were on one corner, and the other, we're at an intersection. The other three corners were just desolate. One's an abandoned gas station. Well, that's still there, but they're landscaping, and it's neighbors just coming out and doing it. The other corners, people tell me they move into the neighborhood because we're there. But the thing about the families is, I think parenting. We're not meant to parent alone. We're not meant to parent in isolation. So the caregivers are making connections with each other. They have play dates at Hello Baby. They have play dates in each other's homes. And the kids, I thought having the name Baby in the name would keep the older kids out, because at some of the play centers on the north side, like the 12-year-olds are just mowing over the babies, but they all want to come back.
Wow.
But they get it's for the littler kids. So they help with them. They're role models, they're helpers, and nothing makes me happier.
This is just, I think, an inspiring story and really inspiring work that you are doing, Debbie. And we should all check out the book called Hello Baby, Building an Oasis in a Play Desert. And we can all check out the website for your great organization, Hello Baby, at hellobabychgo.org. Debbie Frisch is the founder and executive director of Hello Baby and the co-author of the book that we've been talking about. Hey, Debbie, really, thank you for your time today. Congratulations on the book. And my goodness, keep doing what you're doing, because Chicago and beyond needs you in this work. So thank you so much.
And thank you for sharing our story. That's what we need. So I appreciate it.
Let's explore some local music with local musician Mark Lofgren. His new record will be released on Friday, May 3rd, and it's called Black Moon Book 3. We should all check out markallenlofgren.bandcamp.com. Mark is here with us today. And Mark, the last time you and I talked on this program was just about 2 years ago. You're back at it, man.
Yeah, it seems like I'm on a 2-year cycle. I think I started the first Black Moon book when I got laid off, like a lot of people did during the COVID year. And I found myself with lots of extra time,
yeah,
which was kind of a blessing in some ways, because I really want to do musically, with us not getting together as bands and things like that. So I made use of it. And then it feels like that's just, I'm not like planning it out that way. That just seems about how long it takes me to come up with another set of songs that seem to fit together and work under the moniker, such as it is.
Right. Well, hey, here we are talking about it again. Now, I just want to clarify, I'm talking with the musician Mark Lofgren and not the state senator from Iowa, Mark Lofgren, right?
Yeah, I saw that. And then there's another Lofgren somewhere in the Senate. We're like, you know, doing a Kennedy thing, I think.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Camelot, Lofgren Camelot, right?
Exactly. I'm trying to, you know, pull them all together.
That's right. All right. Well, you're not the senator. You're the musician, but that's okay.
I'm not.
And look, let's talk about what you've got going on here, your music. So, you know, listening to your music, it's interesting because I hear elements of indie rock. Certainly there's the acoustic element to it. But there's a singer-songwriter kind of component. How do you explain it? Can you just clear this up for us? What is your music, Mark?
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's definitely an indie project. It's definitely done in my at-home studio. You know, I'm also in the Luck of Eden Hall and the Thin Cherries, which are more, you know, we've recorded more in studios, although we have done some more indie stuff. But this one's just me, you know, at home.
Yeah,
with my computer and my mics and my guitars and plugins and just, you know, making stuff. It usually starts, this one especially started with more acoustic guitar. It wasn't a conscious choice. I usually put ideas down on the phone and then listen back, and 9 out of 10 of them, out of them are not really usable or just don't hit me.
Yeah.
I'm just looking for like a connection, you know, or something that seems fresh. But yeah, it's definitely an indie. But this one especially, I felt like it was more vocal driven and a little more acoustic. So I kind of wrote songs with that in mind.
So the album is called Black Moon Book 3. So this is kind of like a Led Zeppelin. You got your Led Zeppelin 1, 2, and 3, right? This is kind of what you're doing?
So the next one, I'll have to just do a cymbal or something.
Yeah, the next one, if it's 4, it's got to be all the hits, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but it seemed funny because, you know, it ends in book. And I was like, book 1, book 2, book 3, you know? And plus, since it is more of a solo project, it would get very confusing to have Black Moon Book and then another title and then my name, you know, since it's mostly just me. So right. I'm kind of boxing myself in at some point.
Well, like you said, you recorded most of this. I mean, this was done at home. So you are doing the instrumentation here. And because of where we are with technology, the modern marvel of computers, I mean, there's keyboards, but there's synthesizer, there's you're patching in different sound effects so these instruments can sound like other instruments, but that's really the process that you used creating this album.
Yeah, basically, and then figuring out how to not go off the rails and make it feel like it's cohesive. So I try to still think of it like it is a band, or it's, you know, a limited, semi-limited set of instruments or things like that for the project, so it doesn't, just to connect it. Because it does get a little crazy. You can pull up any, do a xylophone, you can do whatever, you know whether you should or not on that song, that's another story.
Yeah, but. Right. Well, that's, I think, a really interesting point that, I mean, you can, because of how computers and technology work today at home, you can create an entire band from your computer. Even if you started on guitar, you can have the keyboards and you can have synthesizers and you can have the drums. I know the drums on here, a lot of loops and even some AI drumming. Is that, oh my God, is it taking over?
It is, you know, and in my real job, quote unquote, I do a lot of stuff with computers anyways, in terms of video editing and motion graphics. And that's a huge topic anyways. So yeah, I just tried out the Logic has a built-in drummer, Logic Pro. Mm-hmm. But I kind of made a joke to August, who does publicity for me, about, you know, it's kind of unruly like a regular drummer. You know, if you let it just go to town, it'll throw all sorts of fills in, and, you know, overplay, you know, like, you know, it's like howl of drums. It's taken over.
Yeah, right.
So I found I had to really just, it almost was like just building loops again. I'd take a little section, say, okay, that's okay. And then try to fit them all together, because you want it just not to have fills and spots it's not supposed to be in. And, you know, for bridges and other intros and outros, it was hard to wrangle. I don't think I'd do it again.
Yeah.
but for those 3 or 4 songs I used it on, I really thought it worked well, and you can kind of build your own kit. So it's almost like, you know, it seems cohesive in a way. I didn't want it to feel like every song's got a different tone or something like that.
And that's hard, because fun. Can really, you have to think about it like, okay, now I'm thinking about the drum perspective, and now I'm thinking about the bass perspective, and you have to shift your brain a little bit. I would think that could be a little unnerving, that you could lose your mind, you know?
Yes, this is all correct.
Well,
I found the mind again. But yeah, I think if I did another one and I decided to do more of, you know, regular drum sound instead of a mix of electronic drums and loops and things, I would probably have a drummer, you know, and record at least the drums in the studio. I think it's just more organic, and I honestly, it'd probably be faster.
Yeah. So the single, which is coming out in April, on April 12th, is called Ne'er-Do-Wells. And it sounds great. It's about living in the city.
Yeah, basically. It's sort of like a remembrance thing, where I think my favorite line is, right, it's something like, you know, talking about how there was a perfect time way back when, which isn't really true, but we kind of romanticize, you know.
Are often found in yesterday's. We know
well. The album is called Black Moon Book 3, and we can check out your Bandcamp site, markallenlofgren.bandcamp.com, and Black Moon Book 3 comes out Friday, May 3rd, and who knows, maybe a listening party in there. We'll see what happens, but I'm sure, Mark, you will let us know and put all that information on the Bandcamp site.
I will.
And this is great, man. I'm really excited for you. It sounds wonderful. And Mark Lofgren, local musician, check out his Bandcamp site and pretty soon go see him live and get the album. And hey, man, congratulations on Black Moon Book 3 and keep it going.
Thanks. Great to talk to you as always. When we were young, we used to hide behind the graves and say our names.
We ride along. And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 912 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. You're the best. So is Bob Ferguson. He's our engineer in the WGN radio studio helping us out. And I hope you have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.